Another week in the books in the major league season, and the division races are already starting to heat up, or in some teams' cases, cool down. Let's talk about it.
Hi, welcome to Almost Cooperstown. I'm Mark.
And this is Gordon.
And we love talking about baseball.
I know we always talk about how you can't forecast the whole season from the first few weeks. We
look 2 weeks.
The 2 weeks. Well, I mean, with last year with the Pittsburgh Pirates being 20-8 or 20-5.
They're in first place right now.
They're in first place right now. But I think while you can't win the division in April, you can put yourself in a position where it's very, very difficult to win the division.
Say the Miami Marlins.
Right. I think a team.
And the Chicago White Sox.
You know who's another team that's starting to head
Rockies.
In that direction? No, well, all of those teams we more or less expected to be there. The Houston Astros are 5-11.
Are you really worried about the Astros?
I think I'm not worried about them. I'm worried that they dug themselves a hole too deep to climb out of in a reasonable fashion.
I'm more concerned for them that what I count on from them is that Framber Valdez is going to be good. Not only has he not been good, he's a little injured, maybe more than a little. We're not even sure at this point. Hopefully he'll come back from that. And so their pitching staff, which has always been the backbone of the team, no Verlander yet. They got some issues.
Because the lineup has been there. Yordan Alvarez had a good week. Jose Altuve had a good week. Kyle Tucker had a good week. They're getting their
Abreu
hitting.
Looks old.
But we thought he was old last year when he was playing with them. The fact that he was, I think anybody after the season that he had last year for Houston, if you were really thinking he was going to repeat that after kind of discovering it again out of nowhere, you were existing a little bit on hope, I feel like. It's just tough to expect a guy who we were already thinking of as an older player to suddenly have a late career renaissance and like keep improving and getting better from that point.
I'll just take you on a what about. So what if? Let's say the Astros are going along. They're in it, but they're struggling a little bit. They still have a chance to win. The Mets are out of it.
It's totally possible.
Right? Pete Alonso.
I think first base
for the Houston Astros.
I think the Astros probably do not want to trade their entire farm system to the Mets. They've already given them a fair number of prospects.
And you picked up what I'm thinking because, you know, the Mets made a pretty good deal with what they got. So what else you got?
We might be in. And Pete Alonso has had an unbelievable last 7 days. He's been hitting well.
He's on a pace for 69 homers.
Obviously, he's not going to do that. But I think another 50 home run season could certainly be in the cards for Pete Alonso, provided he stays healthy.
Oh, I think so, too. And he's certainly motivated to do that. Playing for a contract. I think the AL West, since you mentioned the Astros, and the Rangers, I think, here on the Sunday, have a one-game lead. They're one game over, or half-game lead. They're one game over 500, so no one's burning it up there.
Right. I think the one thing I will say, when you look at this division, the Rangers are the only team with a positive run differential over the first.
That's a good stat.
Right. They're 17 over. Everybody else is negative, with the Athletics and the Mariners being badly negative.
And I think the Mariners are where I'd look and going, there, that surprises me a little bit. I didn't think they were going to be great. I was one that said
that. The Mariners are a team that have typically come on in the second half of seasons, it seemed like. They struggled out of the gate last year, but that's a team with a lot of good starting pitching that I expect will right the ship. But they, too, they're only a couple games from being in that similar situation as the Astros, where it's like, unless you have an unexpectedly good series of play where you win like 12, 13 games in a row, and the other teams in your divisions also perform badly in that period, it's really hard to climb back up. Look at the Mets trying to pass the Braves a couple years ago, where it didn't matter how well you played. They just kept on winning, so you never were able to make up any ground.
But the American League West is a division, much like the NL West, I think, where the teams are going to beat the heck out of each other. And I think, you know, because all you've got is the one doormat in both divisions.
Yep.
And then you've got these other teams. And at least in the National League West, the Dodgers seem to be a cut above the other teams. I'm not sure if I would say the Rangers are that team, or that maybe they are right now, but the Astros, the Mariners, we expect more from. Even the Angels have played okay so far.
And it's interesting how you're seeing, you know, you've got a division like the AL Central, which I think largely off the overperformance of the Royals and the Guardians in our minds, are looking a little bit better, because you expect the Twins to improve from where they are. And you're like, okay, that division is sort of performing a little bit above standards, where I think you could make the argument, at least in some people's eyes, the AL East is underperforming.
I think that's a good argument. And the Tigers, who got off to the nice start, courtesy to some degree of the Mets,
right?
You know, they're 8-6 now going into Sunday's games. You know, I think the Tigers flirted with 500 all year long. I think that would be a good year for them. But this talk of them like being a playoff team, winning the division, I always thought was a little much, except in that division.
In that division, it becomes a much more realistic possibility.
Because the Guardians have, I guess, overperformed people's expectations, maybe even their own.
Well, their offense has been performing a lot better than I would have expected.
Right. Outperforming.
They've been scoring in a way I
the Naylor brothers and have been hitting. But losing Shane Bieber, you know, this is a team built around pitching, the Guardians. I don't know if you'll cover that.
That's the kind of injury that doesn't show its effect in the short term, but in the long run.
Around August.
Right. Around August, you're going to feel the effects of not having any more Shane Bieber.
So I think, you know, the Tigers are going to come back. Most of the teams, and we're seeing, it's funny how even after 2 weeks, right, things are starting to settle into
what do you think? I mean, you look at the AL East and you start thinking, okay, I feel pretty good about two of my calls on that. And then there's really only one surprise in that division to me, and that's the Orioles. And this is a slight underperformance because they're 8-6.
Like, yeah. Well, they're you know, it's still Yankees and Orioles if you go on winning record. Percentage for what that's worth. But again, winning percentage after 14-15 games means
doesn't
nothing.
Mean a lot.
Nothing.
Well, I think if we check in another 2 or 3 weeks, then winning percentage starts meaning a little bit
I think
more.
The Red Sox and one of my favorite managers, Alex Cora, you know, got off to a good start, which helps them. I don't see them going
that's
along.
A team who, and also that's a team whose specific weaknesses in starting pitching tend to manifest itself over the course of the season. When you get later in the season, when these starters haven't been going long, a concern we share about our Mets, that's when your bullpen can start to struggle in those late summer days where it's really hot.
And the Yankees have been, okay, even better than you could have ever expected. I mean, you know, they're 12-3 going into Sunday games. Juan Soto has been a beast.
Right.
Aaron Judge has not done very much.
The biggest knock I can give the Yankees is, like, it kind of feels like they haven't really played anybody. Yeah. They've played a lot of bad teams so far.
I don't like...
Are they bad because they've played the Yankees?
No, but I just think it's the good start they needed to get over, get off to, because, you know, they're still waiting now. Gerrit Cole may not be around till June 1st or something like that.
So
that's 2 months without Gerrit Cole. That's a guy to bring back to the rotation if you can be there.
Okay, we've navigated 2 weeks out of the eight. Just 6 weeks more.
And the Orioles bring up Jackson Holliday, Matt Holliday's son.
Not off to a blazing start. No,
well, 0-11 with 7 strikeouts in his first 3 games. But not so much.
But the same way that we never look at any rookie who has a super hot, like, you know, who was that guy, Davis Schneider for the Blue Jays last year? Nobody's talking about Davis Schneider like that this year.
Did you see the video of Jackson Holliday when he was a little kid and is going to, you know, the games that his dad was playing in? His dad was a major league, and he's got like this little wiffle bat or something like that. The kid just swings the bat like Gary Sheffield every time. He swings it like the hardest he possibly can from the time he was like, he's like a foot tall.
There was a really good story talking about there was some major leaguer that like saw Jackson Holliday when like he was like a kid, like 11 or 12, and he's like, oh no, he's gonna be a major. Like, he was like, he knew as soon as he came
out of the womb swinging hard,
right? Like, they just knew this kid was gonna be a ball player from the moment they saw him. And obviously that's a lot of pressure to live up to, and especially I wonder with the Orioles struggling, quote unquote,
I don't think they're struggling,
right, but for them they might consider that, considering probably what their expectations were. They expected to do what the Yankees are doing right now.
Here's the thing: if you're the Orioles and you won 8 out of your first 14 games, you 571 percentage. Had you won one more game, you'd be 9-5 with a 643 winning percentage.
Right.
That would sound fantastic.
It changes dramatically with one or two games. But I just wonder if, you know, you get brought up, if you're Jackson Holliday, the team isn't, you know, quote unquote, as I said, performing up to standards. Maybe he's pressing a little bit. That could certainly lead.
You think?
A little, yeah. Certainly 0-11 with 7 strikeouts would suggest it.
I mean, and the other team in the AL East that I think is, and they're going to do this all season long, you're just not going to really think about them. Oh, yeah, they're still in the American League. This is the Rays. Right. Like, name a dynamic player right now. Randy Arozarena, you know, is on the team, but I don't think he's done anything spectacular this year. They've won more games than they've lost, you know, here on going in Sunday, 8-7. I just feel like they lack.
That's a team that's a
pizzazz.
It's a team that they're -19 in run differential.
which is unusual for them.
Right, but they're not scoring. They've only scored 59 runs on the season.
Remember the start they got off to last year offensively, right?
So I worry about that's a team that could suddenly struggle. That suggests they're winning lots of close games and then losing big in the other games, and that's not usually a recipe for sustained success.
And I'm starting to come around to your assessment on the Blue Jays. You know, just now it's only 2 weeks again.
I was out on
you were there. You were there. The season. Why can't they do better? There's what I think.
Honestly, it was honestly and almost just a rejection of my own gambler's fallacy. We have been sitting here suggesting they're the dark horse of the AL East. It's finally going to be the Blue Jay season for like 5-6 years now. Yeah. Even before Bo Bichette and Vlad Guerrero, it's always felt like they're the team that's like, oh, they're going to be the ones that challenge the Yankees and the Red Sox or the Rays.
A stopped clock is right twice.
Guess what?
A
no, day. That's the Orioles.
Right.
And they're heading downwards, and it doesn't look like Alex Manoah is going to suddenly figure it out and come back
he's
to the
not,
majors.
Apparently. He's not.
He can't even get a guys out at single A. So you have I don't know what that team is going to do. Other than you start having to have the very scary assessment of, oh no, is there something rotten with this core?
I think that's a fair thing to say. You look at the individual players, and you know who wouldn't want Bichette? Who wouldn't want Vlad Guerrero Jr.?
It's something that I've unfortunately said watching our Mets this season. I've had those same fears of like, is there just something not right with this group that it's just not the right
one? And you can't blow up. When you say you can't blow up the whole thing, but you won't trade everybody.
You won't trade everybody. You pick the guys you think you want to keep, but. You know, for the Blue Jays, that's a lot of scary equations of because do you go with Vlad Guerrero Jr.? He's not been the player you've expected the last two seasons. He's not off to a blazing start this season.
Yeah.
What do you do? Do you trust to get back to his MVP form or they're close to there?
I have more faith in him turning around than 36-year-old George Springer.
Certainly.
So I think that's one of the things is somehow Springer got sneakily old.
He was old.
He's been around, I guess, much longer than I thought. And I know he went to the University of Connecticut, good college player. And you know, obviously he had all the success with the Astros, but I didn't realize that this guy had been playing MLB for this long a time. So look at the National League, and maybe that's even a better sort of indication.
Well, I think what's interesting is when you look at the National League, the divisions are very, very tight for the most part. Like you've got you just don't have that one team like the Yankees sort of running away with one.
Well, you know, the NL Central, we talked about this last week, you know, the best division in baseball. I called it the NL East, you know, before the season because I didn't expect very much to happen good there.
No, but you've got the Brewers and the Pirates who are off to great starts.
That's not going to last, is it?
Well, I mean, the Brewers certainly making me look good.
Making me look bad because I actually think it came out and said there's a world in which the Brewers are bad.
Right.
And which
you had them fourth in the division.
Yeah, so they're 10-3 off to a great start.
They're 7-1 on the road. And that's also courtesy of going to New York and whipping up on the Mets in that opening series.
You don't think they're going to win, 78% of their or 87% of their
probably
away games?
Not. So I think that's something that you have. But they've only played 5 home games. So now they've got a good run differential. They've been playing well. They've been pitching well. I think that's what surprised me is that with all of the pitchers they lost, they've kind of just kept on trucking with that pitching staff. I think the St. Louis Cardinals being in last is a little vindicating.
Well, I think I had said that now they're in last. You know, really, aside from the Brewers who are off to that great start,
but everybody in that division is playing well. They all have positive run differentials,
right? And so there it is. We're going to beat the crap out of each other all season long is what I'm thinking could happen, which really, you know, could have the effect of that division and here's my dream scenario, right? That division and the NL West, right? You have the Dodgers I mentioned, but the Padres, Diamondbacks, and Giants. Take your pick of the team that you think will be the best of those three.
One team will emerge, but who will it be?
But they're going to pound each other. So that allows for NL East teams to kind of sneak in there and have a better record possibly because they're not beating the crap out of each other as much.
And with Spencer Strider now being out for the year with Tommy John surgery, the Atlanta Braves makeup as a team is not quite the same way.
They still can hit. They still can score runs.
But that pitching staff is not nearly as formidable. And we've seen that bullpen, who was really good before that Met series, struggled mightily in that Met series.
Tyler Matzek had a nightmare series against the Mets.
Nightmarish series. So you have to
never happens, by the way.
That never happens. So I think the Atlanta Braves look a little bit more mortal than they did last year. But they've been a team that's also tended to come on strong once they hit their stride in like June.
Because in the NL East, you have two teams now because we both didn't think the Marlins were going to be good this year, and we picked them, you know, for fourth or even fifth. Not this bad, obviously. They are possibly as bad as the Rockies
and the White Sox.
And the A's and the White Sox, which I don't think anybody would have thought
and
before
even
the season.
The A's are playing, you know, the A's are playing six. They're 6-9, so they're playing 400 baseball. They're not even close to what like the Marlins are.
And that makes me feel good for the A's, you know, for their fans, and because of obviously what happened with them moving to Sacramento in a 14,000 seat stadium next year. This has got to be the weirdest year to play for the team in front of
or
fans.
Or follow this team.
That don't. So most people are saying, by the way, 50-50 on the A's actually moving to Vegas.
It's that down.
It's definitely not as sure.
You know, they really messed that move up.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. So I think, you know, things have shaken out. You know, the Dodgers with Shohei has absolutely gone crazy. I don't know if you've seen
He's been playing amazing last week. He's been hitting like a 1,200 something OPS.
Yeah, yeah. He's batting like .330 now. He's in the National League leaders in multiple categories. Forget about what Freddie Freeman and
1,400 OPS.
Mookie Betts are already doing. So hitting-wise, that has helped the Dodgers overcome pitching that is a little nervous.
At least you and I were saying before the season that was the concern for the Dodgers. Has how do they put it together until some of those arms come?
They need
back.
Those guys to
the
come back.
The ones that do are.
But when they
back.
Do.
But when they do, that's a lot of reinforcements, and they're a team you can generally count on making a move. And so far, Glasnow has looked worth every penny of that contract.
Didn't you know that was going to happen? I guess the only thing you thought was, but will he be able to actually pitch without getting hurt?
Can he sustain it the whole
season?
Because
we knew the guy was an amazing pitcher.
Yamamoto's had one really good start, one pretty bad start.
He pitched the other night. I didn't see the result of
his third start was nondescript, I'm guessing, because people were really, I don't remember them talking about it like it was anything too amazing. But he's kind of been, it's certainly not as good as his country mate Shoto Imamanga from
been
really good his first three starts for the Cubs. He hasn't allowed a run yet.
Right. But it's Chicago and it's early and the wind ain't blowing out yet at Wrigley. So it'll be a little different, you know, because the guy does give up some home runs, if I'm not mistaken. You know, we had today here in New York the retirement ceremony of Dwight Dr. K. Gooden.
Yes, number 16.
Number 16.
Had his number retired.
And for Mets fans, obviously of that period, that know the 1986 Mets, the 1985 Mets, I think, you know, no one's really surprised if you watched him pitch that he got his number retired.
An overdue ceremony.
But his all-time numbers with the Mets, because of moving around and having his issues, you almost could look at them and going, wow, you know, I know he was amazing for those 2 years, but it really only, or
he's
3 years.
He's
maybe.
Still top 10 in just about like every made in top five in a lot of them, just about every major statistics for the Mets that a pitcher could have.
And he's in my pantheon of top five Met pitchers of all time. He definitely would be two or three.
And if you look at his rise to greatness, it perfectly lines up with that. He has the unbelievable 84, the even better 85, and then they win the World Series in 86. So that right there just established his legacy as a Met all-time great pretty much just in that three-year run.
But I do remember him throwing that fastball to Mike Socha in 88, and Mike Socha, you know, could only hit a fastball.
And he hit it.
Don't throw it, and he threw it. And I said this before in this podcast going, and everybody looked at me like I told Socha what was coming, like he would listen to me in the stands.
Yeah,
I'd like to ask Socha about that sometime. Like, could you have hidden something about, you know, right.
Did you hear some guy in the stands saying, I didn't do it.
So, yeah, but it was good to see Gooden out there with all of the, you know, teammates from 86. Unfortunately, it rained during the ceremony, so a lot of the Mets fans that were in their seats actually retreated under the stands. So by the time he finished the ceremony, it was kind of a full-on rain, and they couldn't even watch it. So
as we look forward to this week ahead, any series you're looking forward into particular? There's one I'm very interested in that I think is
okay, go ahead.
Well, there's a big series, I think, with the Atlanta Braves heading down to Houston to play the Astros. That's a struggling Astros team. They're 5-11 with a good Braves team coming in. You don't want to be 5-14 when the Braves leave.
No, I would say
you're suddenly getting into worrying.
And the Astros will play today, so they'll have one more game against the Rangers this weekend. They certainly could win the series if they won this game, and that would be a big boost
before the Braves come into town. I mean, any ones that you're looking forward to?
I was looking at the Diamondbacks. Actually, I think they're going to Chicago to play the Cubs.
Other way around, Cubs are heading to the Arizona desert.
And so both teams actually, and the Diamondbacks obviously haven't gone to the World Series last year, are trying to establish themselves this season. And because their records are around 500, you clearly don't know which way they're going to go. The Cubs look like they're going to be a better team than they were last year. I think that that's a real important series early, and you only play the team in the other team's ballpark when you're playing out of division like that once. So this is the only time you're going
to
see that.
And I will be looking forward to the Mets playing the Dodgers this upcoming week, because we'll probably get to see Yamamoto pitch in that series, and that'll be fun as a Met fan.
You know, I was doing that calculation the other day, actually. I think he pitches Wednesday this week, which would not have him pitching in the Met series.
He wouldn't pitch until the Mets are, going to be there on, like, Friday.
They're going to be there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and so he would pitch again Monday or Tuesday. So I think he actually did that mental gymnastics.
Maybe he'll get lucky with, like, a
lane.
I'd love to watch him pitch.
Maybe he'll pitch. And you know, the Tigers, I think, also have an interesting week, because they're trying to obviously establish that this is the new Tiger team. They will entertain the Rangers for four games.
And that's a big series for them.
And then go to Minnesota. So that's a telling week for them.
Right. That's a week where the Detroit Tigers could kind of very much make an announcement that saying, you know, we're here to play this season. If you win that series against Detroit, then you go and you take care of business against Minnesota. All of a sudden, you're looking like, you know, ready to say, hey, we're taking the crown this year. Not hold on, you know, Kansas City and Cleveland.
So the Pirates come to New York, the first play. No, the Brewers are in first place. But
tied for first, Pirates.
No, the Pirates are actually a full game behind. They're 10-5, and the Brewers today, going into Sunday games, are 10-3.
So they got
you know, two games in the loss column after.
I saw 10 wins. I thought I would.
That should be interesting to see, because, you know, I just feel like the Pirates are a team that it's they're going to be 500
in the blink of an eye. Always waiting for the other shoe to drop.
I do.
You know, the carriage to turn back into a pumpkin.
And like everything, you know, you can be wrong singing the same. We were talking about that before, singing the same song all the time.
Well, I mean, how much if we had been really doing this all last season, how much would we have been dead in the Marlins the whole way? Oh, they're not going to make the playoffs.
Absolutely right.
They can't keep this up.
Absolutely right.
And they would have kept.
We were right. Next year.
And that's the thing. You could keep it up for a season. You can't keep up the magic for two seasons in a row. If you're not playing sustainable baseball, that's why I like looking at run differential, because that's really going to tell you. If you see some team that's got a terrible run differential, they might be like last year's Padres and still find a way to struggle a whole season, but they're not going to do that 2 years in a row.
Right, right. And even the Mets have kind of, you know, some of the stuff that wasn't falling for them last year.
They're the only other team in the NL East that's has a positive or even run differential besides the Braves.
Mainly on the back of a 16-4 win.
Right, that helped a lot.
So that really helps. Kristen Yelich of the Brewers has had a terrific start, but I think I saw that he came up a little back injury the other day.
And that's how it starts
with him. Yeah, I feel like really willing to see that. Want to see that player, you know, excel for a whole whole season. I noticed this week that the Minnesota Twins now have two players with the same name.
Well, that's confusing.
A relief pitcher and a jack of all trades player. Both of them are named Diego Castillo. Aren't there like 37 Diego Castillos playing in the major?
They're both not like pitchers or position players. That would just be way too confusing. Do you think they'd ever use that to like try and like trick the other team?
Do you know the Mets used to have two pitchers named Bobby Jones, and one was Bobby J. Jones, and one was Bobby L. Jones or something
like
that?
Did they have like the middle initial?
Yes, they had to put the middle initial so you could tell. Now, but one of them was right-handed and one of them was left-handed.
So I'm just saying, if you had like two guys, like what if you had like two twins with really similar names? Could you just mess with other teams? Like, which one's coming in to pitch? I don't know.
So I a couple of interesting things I saw this week, besides that, Jonathan Lusiga, also another guy, the Yankees reliever, is having UCL surgery. And Strider finally did have his UCL surgery. So we won't be seeing him until maybe.
For a while.
Yeah, maybe the end of next year if it all goes well. I don't even know if you'd want to do that.
Yeah, I don't know.
So fastball, I noticed the fastball is up even over last year by two-tenths of a mile an hour. But over the past 7 years, it's up a whole mile an hour from 93 to 94. That's pretty significant in a pretty small
amount
of time.
And especially when you look at how long it took it to go up a mile an hour in the past.
Right, right. Pitch clock violations are down.
Making sense. Pitchers are used to it. They're not going to make as many mistakes.
So all this talk about the injuries being a result of the pitch clock, I don't really think the pitchers are pitching to that, or else they'd be, you know.
They'd be taking more violations.
And it's interesting because games are taking a little longer this year than last year by a couple of minutes. And the main reason they're giving is timeouts by both the batter and or the pitcher. Everybody is like, you get one timeout per at bat. And the batters seem to be doing that now. out in every at bat.
The batters are much more comfortable using it, and so they're going to do it more often now, which is fine. That's why we give it to them.
Here's another interesting stat. Batting averages are actually down a point from last year, which, again, it's only 2 weeks, so it really doesn't matter, from, I think, 250 to 249. But right-handed batters are down 14 points from last year, from 254 to 240, and the left-handers are only down 2 points.
That seems to me more sample size.
I tend to think that's it, but you know, like, I don't know why it would be that way, why all of a sudden right-handed batters would struggle. And one of your favorite umpires is getting called out again.
Oh, no. What an Angel Hernandez.
Right. Yeah. Right. What is it like? Anytime I say this is an umpire that everybody doesn't – I didn't think it was true, because if you looked at Angel Hernandez's record, it's not as bad as you think it would be based upon the way that people talk about
him. Because here's the thing. I told you he's the worst umpire in the league with a 91% correct call ratio – initially, that doesn't sound right until you think about, wait a second, that means he's getting one out of every 10 pitches wrong?
Yeah. And apparently this past Friday night, he took it to a whole new level and was calling balls, strikes.
He had some ridiculous calls in a game.
And I think
it was a Yankee-Guardian game.
I think it was. And I think it's a function of we're just waiting for the pitch com to come to the major leagues and stop this madness.
Unfortunately for the umpires, technology advanced too far where now we have the ability to truly tell on TV and on replay whether or not these pitches are balls and strikes. And frankly, we were giving them what was an impossible task. It was stand behind a guy and then have this other guy throw balls at you like 95 plus miles an hour. And then you have to judge whether or not it passes through an imaginary zone.
This happened even at the major league level, I think, way back when in the beginning of baseball. But you remember when you would umpire some games, you know, and you'd actually stand behind the pitcher because you could, you wanted to, you'd call balls and strikes.
I always prefer calling from behind the pitcher.
Behind the pitcher.
Well, see, the thing is, in Little League, it's mostly because you just have no faith that the small child
the catcher's
going to
catch the ball. You're going to get killed back there. Right?
And so you're really, mostly you're thinking about protecting the ankles, because that's what you're worried about, because you got the chest protector. But you know, like, it only takes him just whiffing on one low one in the dirt where you're taking a ball off the ankle and hobbling the rest of the afternoon.
But it's essentially the same thing when you watch it on TV, right? And you watch the little box and you see, like, okay, the thing clearly missed, you know, like a foot to the left, and the umpire says strike. You're like, what?
Well, part of the issue, and I think this is why we're not seeing it in the major leagues yet, is that right now with the automatic balls and strike, it's pretty accurate, but it's not accurate to the box on TV, and it would be a really weird viewing experience. So they don't, I don't think they know how to reconcile that, because how do you represent a 3D space that the ball is passing through to a viewer on a direct head-on line with the camera?
I think that's the problem too. I think is they haven't figured out a way to depict it such that it agrees and the fan can see it, and they're going to count it that way.
The thing that you're going to have to change is how you shoot the game. The traditional over-the-shoulder from behind the pitcher, direct head-on view, can't be the default shot when the pitch is coming in anymore, because you can't properly represent the strike zone to the fan when you do that.
And it's funny you mention that, because the game is – they're getting better and better at shooting the game from angles that we're not accustomed to having seen the whole time we've been watching baseball. But I wonder how far it goes, right? The next time the guy is – you know, McNeil's out there trying to catch a pop-up at second base and the cameraman's standing right next to him.
That's the thing. You're not going to need a cameraman.
You have drones?
It's going to be drones.
I don't know. What if a fly – what if a pop fly hits the drone?
It's never going to hit the drone, though. They're too good. It's going to be able to see the ball is coming and just move itself out of the way with AI.
What you're saying makes sense. I think as a viewer, it would be very disconcerting to see a bunch of drones flying over the field when the game is being played.
Except they'd probably be good enough and well-programmed enough to just never capture one another in the shots.
Yeah, and it's a good point, because like if you watch an NBA game or a football game and they got the camera – you really don't notice that camera zipping.
You never notice
line over the thing. You don't
how
really
often
see
it. Do you really notice the other cameramen in football that are shooting the game? You only see the people that are on the sidelines that are very visible. You never notice almost the other guys shooting.
And now they've got cameras in like the bases, and they've got, so they're gonna have cameras in weird places. But yeah, I keep thinking that eventually you're gonna see the guy out there as some guy's making a catch on the field to play.
Where it's going to be most noticeable will be in the ballpark with the drones. That's where you're gonna notice the difference. But even then, you're looking down at the field. You're really gonna be looking above the players where the drones are flying around doing their business? Probably not.
Hopefully you're watching the game and paying attention to it.
Well, I don't think that's as much this week as baseball, as more as this future in baseball about 20 years from now.
But hey, it's only – so basically we've played about a tenth of the season almost.
So we're maybe through the first innings.
Thank you for listening. You can follow us on your favorite podcast platform or follow us on YouTube where we have video form of these podcasts.
Or you can also follow us on social media, on Insta, on Twitter, or on Facebook at Almost Coop. Thanks for listening.